Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello gang, Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Before we get started with today's episode proper, we've got some very special news to share with you. This September, we'll be coming live to Bristol, Manchester and London with what we like to call Mid-Evening Matters. It's essentially us discussing and celebrating Mid-Morning Matters Series 2, a couple of episodes each night. On Friday, the 7th of September, we'll be at the Wardrobe Theatre in Bristol. On Saturday, the 8th of September, we'll be at the Lowry in Manchester. And on Sunday, the 9th of September, we'll be at King's Place in London. You can get tickets now at monkeytennispod.com. We're very, very excited to share our thoughts, musings, theories and speculation around Mid-Morning Matters Series 2 with you in a live atmosphere. It's great news. We're really looking forward to it. I hope as many of you can join us as possible, and we're really pleased to be bringing the show to Bristol for the first time. And obviously, those of you that caught us at Comic-Con in Manchester, we hope you'll pop back out for our live show. And those of you that have been to our live shows at the Prince Charles Cinema in London, yes, please do head back out. It's happening this September, 7th, 8th and 9th. 7th in Bristol, 8th in Manchester, 9th in London. Tickets are on sale now at monkeytennispod.com. Hard sell over. Now it's time to get into the episode. Thanks for listening. North Norfolk
Monkey Tennis?
Well, this is great banter.
Hot, 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 hot ham. Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Are you on an E? Monkey Tennis?
Yeah.
I'm spinning plates here, mate, I'll be honest.
Monkey Tennis?
There have been times when I've been more rubbery than turgid.
Monkey Tennis?
Tits bits. Tit bits.
Yes, and yes. It's just an idiom.
You're an idiot.
Ooh, that's mustard.
Monkey Tennis?
Sustaining and maintaining our core listenership in an increasingly fragmented marketplace.
Greetings, pod fans, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
This is Chat Down, street style for the over 40s.
Nick Older.
You're from Holt, Jill, you're from Holt.
And Tom Stab.
Oh, look, Rain Wooney, top one.
So we're now back onto tackling Mid-Morning Matters Series 1. We've already covered the first episode. You can go back and listen to that at your leisure. So we're on to episode 2.
Hello, Mustard.
a couple of things just about the series as a whole, because obviously I wasn't around for the episode one chat.
You were stuck at Chiswick Roundabout during our record of episode one, weren't you?
I checked into Claridge's and ordered room service and stolen a towel.
Unbelievable.
That episode was also brilliant, so no pressure, Adam.
Sure. So Worth noting, obviously, this is the Gibbons brothers' first crack at Alan. They've obviously joined the Partridge writing team at this point, and there's some kind of notable changes to Alan's character, I think. A question to the group I don't think was covered in episode one. What were everyone's thoughts when they first heard that Alan's comeback was going to be A, online, and B, powered by Foster's?
I was very nervous.
It did seem like an odd way to return after the success of I'm Alan Partridge, didn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually. Like the fact that it was partnered with a brand as well, you didn't kind of think... Why does he need to do that?
And that brand was Foster's. Yeah. I wouldn't have said Foster's was an Alan adjacent brand.
It's not brand Partridge and it's not brand Coogan, is it?
And it did also make me think, like, why is this not on the BBC? Does that mean the BBC don't care anymore? But I mean, as we'll go on to discuss, these episodes are of very high quality. So
I think the key factor was probably cash, wasn't it?
I think you might be right.
There's certainly no evidence to the contrary.
So are we saying that Foster's probably stumped up all the cash to finance this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then obviously it was received well and went down well and Sky, you know, took it on. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think...
So this might have been a case of 300 grand and we'll take it to Sky.
Very good.
Because I did wonder, because it being partnered with Foster's, I'm trying to think now, was this before Foster's had started sponsoring comedy on Channel 4?
I don't think it was around the same time. It was on the Foster's Funny YouTube channel, wasn't it? Yeah, so I think they were already associated with comedy
so
at that point.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. I remember at the time thinking, like, was it going to be in association with Channel 4 or something like that? Right, but obviously that didn't
materialise.
And I can't remember if we did cover this in the first episode. I should probably have listened back. But... there was another one, wasn't there? They did the Fast Show after. There was a Fast Show reunion sponsored by Foster's as well, which I think was YouTube only as well.
Yeah,
but that never went to Sky or
didn't,
any
didn't
other
have
telly.
The full cast either. If I remember, I think there were some people missing from.
Right.
Yeah,
that rings a bell. Yeah.
I mean, my feelings in order when I first heard about this were: firstly, gratitude at having him back in any format whatsoever.
Yep.
Astonishment it took so long, and then concern at the seemingly low budget.
Yeah, and the kind of confined one room approach, which could In hindsight, obviously works, but when you hear it on paper, think, is that going to be good?
Yeah, I mean, it's my understanding that the reason they went for the kind of the one room minimal cast approach was because people were so keen on the moments in I'm Alan Partridge where he's broadcasting, and they kind of thought maybe the confines of that mean that you can eke more comedy out of it.
Or maybe when the Foster's check came through, they suddenly changed the script so it was just in one room.
Who can say?
I would agree that those kind of moments where you see Alan in the studio in I'm Alan Partridge, as a fan, I was always keen to see more of that because you kind of know it's going to be Car Crash Radio and it's only ever like 2 or 3 minutes that you get.
Yeah, and some of the absolute highlights of those series were his interactions with Dave Clifton.
Or even just like the way he'd introduce songs and things like that. Yeah. So I think, from a fan's point of view, I think this is definitely what they would want to see, but then obviously you've got a more transient viewer that would just be watching comedy on BBC Two that would probably go, what's this? I'm not interested.
Do you think for that reason this passed a huge proportion of the Partridge audience by?
Because
I think we might be guilty of thinking that all Partridge fans are into it in the way that we're into it, but I think there's huge amounts of people that will watch it if it happens to be on the BBC.
And also, like, having said that, I remember making a point of watching probably the first 2 or 3 because they went out every week.
Yeah, on
the
I remember watching them
and
at
then,
work.
And then after about 3 weeks, I just kind of just forgot to keep checking in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So as much
I tuned
as
in every week, Steve. Every week.
He's not listening.
It's worth mentioning for the purposes of this series that we were watching the rebadged Sky comedy version. I think the only main difference other than the Sky logos and the fact it was packaged as half an hour is that there's opening credits where they zoom in from a map of the world.
Yeah.
You hear the voices of various famous world leaders talking about huge events, and then the joke obviously Alan. It's followed by Alan talking about something completely inane straight off the back of Maggie Thatcher.
Yeah.
And I only realised on a second round of viewings that the quote from Alan at the beginning of each episode is different. I hadn't clocked that straight away.
Yeah. Oh, really?
So I like it that catches him mid-sentence as well.
Yeah,
so
a lot of them do.
This one's which I believe is the real reason Herbie went bananas.
And Ian, to cover episode one, because like I say, I hadn't realised at the time, so the quote on that episode is compiling a database of Norwich's least grateful buskers.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Lovely.
And just one thing on the intro quote, did anyone look into Herbie Goes Bananas, the film?
No, but I'm hoping that you did.
A little bit. 1980 film. It's the fourth film in the Herbie series. I read the...
Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo.
Oh, that is one, yeah. Well done.
Herbie.
Herbie, yeah.
And Herbie Rides Again.
Yes. Yep. don't know if that's all of them, but certainly up until
absolutely
4, which
yeah. smashed
Herbie Goes Bananas.
Followed by Lindsay Lohan vehicle, Herbie Fully Loaded.
Yeah, very good. But actually, having read the synopsis of the plot, Herbie doesn't really go bananas. I mean, he does run, he does cause a little bit.
To go mildly chaotic.
He does.
Dear film
go,
studio,
yeah.
I recently watched Herbie Goes Bananas and was disappointed at the lack of mental health breakdown experienced by Herbie.
And also lack of bananas. He does cause a little bit of havoc on a cruise liner, and much like Megatron, is sentenced to be dropped in the sea.
Oh, I'm so glad we got another Megatron mention. Yeah.
So basically what you wanted from that film was Herbie to be, from the very get-go, a mentally ill car that drives through large crates of bananas for 2 hours.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Would watch.
One other thing about the theme tune of A Big Morning Matters, I don't know if this actually does apply to the theme at all, but original music in this series was written by a Mr. Martin Coogan, who is, of course, Steve's brother,
yep.
that used to be in popular band The Mop Turtles.
Correct. Yep.
Which he does bring up in almost every interview, I've noticed. Steve's very keen to remind everyone of The Mop Turtles, maybe because...
keep those Spotify streams coming in.
Yeah, and also to make it clear that he's not the only quote-unquote celebrity in the family.
Yeah. And he does.
I mean, he is. You're not going to recognise Martin on the street, are you?
Should I give us some context around this episode? As in, would you the TX date and the viewing figures?
Oh, please do.
So, obviously, we're dealing with Series 1, Episode 2, Mustard and Pepper. Mm-hmm. That's how it's titled if you're going off Sky or the DVD versions. So, this aired on Monday, the 16th of July, 2012. Would anybody like to guess at the viewing figures? Adam might have seen them.
I think it'll be low because, one, it's on Sky Atlantic, and two, it's effectively a repeat. So I'm going to say...
But then I guess that is there is a debate to be had about, you know, how many people that watch it on Sky Atlantic would even know that these had been shorts on YouTube.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because don't forget, Foster's did delete them after a while.
Am I right in thinking that this was aired on Sky Atlantic, like, some years after it was online as well?
It was about a year after.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Any intel on what time of day it went out?
I think it was 9 p.m.
Okay.
Okay. 9 or 10 p.m. Okay. I think it was 9 p.m.
Right.
445. 445,000.
Right. I thought you meant 445.
I mean, it is Sky Atlantic. It could be that.
Do you want to go, Adsy?
I've seen the answer.
He's seen it.
I think lower. I'm going to say 80,000.
That is very low.
Mm.
The answer is 199.
Mm.
Somewhere in the middle.
That's your peak figure there, basically. Round up, we'll call it 200,000.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay.
Which I couldn't get the viewing figures for I'm Alan Partridge, but I think it's safe to assume that was a BBC Two comedy at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
That was in the millions.
So there has
been a drop-off.
Yeah. Also, if I'm reading off your sheet correctly, episode one was 368,000, so that's quite a drop-off from episode one to episode two.
So I guess like the level of interest of people seeing the first bit of
people Alan tuned back. In and they thought, I didn't like that, I won't be watching next week.
Or quite possibly, oh, it's a new Alan show, oh no, it's what I watched online last year.
Could also be that.
Yep.
So let's get into the episode itself, where he opens with some Billy Piper chat. I believe we've got facts all
straight,
over the shop.
Straight in with facts about Billy Piper, surely.
I've got facts coming out the wazoo about Billy Piper.
It was straight
into the rabbit hole.
Wasn't it quite weird that he described her sort of as if she's like Annabelle, the horror doll? He's like a painted doll.
It's a face like a reanimated Victorian doll.
Yeah.
A very round, cherubic face like a Victorian doll. It's Billy Piper.
Say what you like about her, but she's the most popular prostitute on ITV.
So none of us are going to contest that, I'm sure.
Can I just quickly...
We might need some context as to what that actually means as well, if people don't know. It was a reference to Secret Diary of a Call Girl, which was an ITV show that ran from 2007 to 2011, that Billy Piper starred in.
I just love the multi-layered delivery of that joke, the beauty of it being that she's not the most popular prostitute on TV, she's the most popular prostitute on ITV, which assumes that A... One, he's compiled an all-channel list of prostitutes ranked by appearance.
I mean, there's no chance he's done that. He's not going to put the effort in.
And B, that he believes that there's a better-looking actor playing a prostitute on another channel.
Channel 4, maybe? Channel 5.
Channel 5, yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. Sorry, that was my point.
Okay, so yeah. So should we go straight down the Billy Piper rabbit hole, as
Let's
it
do
were?
It. Yeah.
But why are we going down the Billy Piper rabbit hole?
Because we want to.
Hey! Yeah, there we go. Okay, is anybody familiar with the Billy Piper...
No.
I mean, whatever it is, no.
Okay. There is a link between Billy Piper and the streets of Soho, and this is not about prostitutes.
I don't know.
Oh, I do know this, but so I'll stay out of it.
Come.
Okay, I'll talk you through it. It's a mnemonic, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, allegedly used by taxi drivers in terms of the knowledge and what have you. A way to remember the major streets crossing Soho running from east to west. So the mnemonic to remember is going for dinner with Billy Piper. So can you name those streets?
Greek Street.
Yeah.
Frith Street.
Yeah.
Dean Street.
Yes.
Wardour Street.
Wardour yep. Street. Beak Street.
No, Berwick Street.
Berwick Street. Yeah. That's what
Poland
I meant.
Street.
Yes.
Poland Street. There you go.
You've nailed it. So, and bizarrely, the person that told me that, Josh Groban. So, clang for wow. that, but just ooh, quite bizarre.
Does your foot hurt from that?
Yeah, no, that really did. But also, just the fact an American told me, I was like, I've never heard that before, and that's really genius and quite useful, because I always have a bit of a...
I mean, the biggest surprise there is that Josh Groban's heard of Billy Piper, really.
Very good point.
Yeah. Friend of the podcast, Josh Groban. Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, he's probably listening.
For anyone who is not familiar with Billy Piper, maybe some of our... followers and listeners outside of the UK. She is the youngest ever artist to debut at number one with a single, with her single Because We Want To. In total, she had 3 number one singles, Because We Want To, Girlfriend and Day and Night, and she had a platinum debut album as well.
Can I ask, what age was she when she went number one?
15, I want to say, I think.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Also, absolutely criminal that Honey to the Bee didn't make number one. That's a crying shame.
It
did
not. Absolute banger.
I also have some stats and facts in terms of sales figures, if anyone's interested.
Let's
in
do
that.
This.
Yep, so album one. Now, I did say it went platinum, but how many albums do you reckon it sold in total? Honey to the Bee. These figures are correct as of the 10th of January 2018.
416,000.
Okay.
530,000.
Okay.
670,000.
380,000.
Okay. Yes. So she just nudged over platinum.
Album 2, Walk of Life, sold 72,000 copies.
So oh, that's a drop. That's a drop.
So in total, she sold 452,804 studio albums, 1,000 studio albums. She also had a Best Of, which sold nearly 19,000 copies.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. A Best Of?
A Best Of.
Two albums.
She had 3 number one singles, fair enough. But interestingly, both albums charted at 14. So neither album...
Consistent performer.
Yep, neither album broke the top 10.
Wow. Any more Billy Piper facts before we move on with our lives?
Yes. She is from Swindon. Can anybody...
thanks, Wikipedia. This is great chat.
Can anybody name any other famous Swindon residents?
Swindonians.
Any famous Swindonians?
I don't think I can.
I guess friend of the show, Lee Cabbage, doesn't count.
I mean, I'll accept. Okay. I'll accept. Also, Mark Lamar. But even more excitingly, Melinda Messenger.
Ooh.
Oh, I did know that.
And also a nice Partridgian link, Andy Partridge of the band XTC.
It's a very 90s feel there, isn't it?
It really is. Swindon, town of the 90s.
If we're talking Alan-esque facts about Swindon, someone once told me that Swindon is the only town in the country to have a roundabout that goes the other way.
Right, we're absolutely getting to the bottom of the barrel of facts here. I suggest we move on.
I think that's an interesting fact.
It's the magic roundabout. That's a big deal, that. You've got like one massive roundabout and like 7 roundabouts around it. Okay. Very interesting.
Let's move on.
Seeing as that section was simply the best, let's move on to simply the best of Norfolk.
I mean, I've got more on Billy Piper, but we can move on.
The jingle that Alan uses for simply the best of Norfolk, I would say it's one of those jingles that is just enough shades away from simply the best by Tina Turner to avoid a copyright claim.
Yeah, they've shifted it like one key.
Has he been burned from the Cluedo incident?
Yes, because he then follows it with an excellent pre-recorded disclaimer about it being nothing like 100 Greatest Britons. And I did have a question. Would we have noticed the similarity without that disclaimer? Is that the joke?
Yes, 100%.
Okay, yeah. I think particularly because at the time that this originally went out, I think that 100 Best Britons had been quite a recent thing.
Right,
as well.
Yeah.
I also thought that voiceover, he sounds quite bored doing it because he's clearly been forced to do it as well. He sounds like he doesn't want to be doing it.
Oh, really? Doing what bit, sorry?
The pre-recorded disclaimer.
I thought you meant the whole segment itself. Right, okay.
He's very excited about suggesting the best people in Norfolk.
And who does he cite?
Horatio Nelson, Oliver Cromwell and Jeremiah Coleman.
For producing the world's hottest yellow paste.
I that accurate?
Well, I wouldn't describe mustard as a paste, but obviously yeah, Alan true. Does.
Well, and he is a stickler when it comes to what's a condiment.
Yeah, yeah,
oh, yeah, we
know that.
Yeah.
We know that from episode
one. Do you
want
to go back quickly and just Tina Turner, Simply the Best? Mm. Did you guys know that that is not an original Tina Turner song?
Is it a cover?
It is a cover version of a, and it's also not called Simply the Best. It's called The Best. Yeah, it's a cover of a Bonnie Tyler original, which was released in 1988, and Tina Turner's version was released in 1989. Stab, you're normally quite good on sales figures. Have you got any intel on this?
No.
I did actually ask you to look it up as well.
Did you?
And you said yes that you would.
We've used all our sales figures time up on Billy Piper anyway,
yeah,
to be
let's
fair.
Let's move on.
Yes, and he also says that Jeremiah Coleman invented the phrase, ooh, that's mustard. I believe Nick has a translation of that.
Ooh, that's mustard.
meaning, ooh, that's very good. Is that a thing, or has he invented that, or is that an actual
phrase? No, that's
phrase?
A thing.
Is it a thing?
Yeah. But, it's definitely a thing.
I've never heard of it.
I've never heard of that.
Okay, well, I've never heard of baby brain or whatever it is, and you've never heard of something being mustard.
Stop going on about it.
It's definitely something.
Quick question to the group. What's your favourite mustard?
In no particular... Well, actually, no. In a particular order, I would say...
I've only asked for one. I don't need a list.
Is this a poll situation again?
Oh, no.
It's English, it's Dijon, it's whole grain.
Stab.
I think whole grain's my favourite. I like the vinegary tang of it. It goes very well with sausages, goes in mash. Yeah,
that's your answer. We've got to move on to Adam.
It's whole grain with Dijon in close second.
Nice. I think Dijon would just pip it for me.
Okay.
Big fan.
Jed, we're going to give you a word. If we ask you for your favourite mustard, are you going to say burger sauce? No.
Is that a promise,
He promises not to. What's your favourite mustard, Jed?
Yellow. Fair. So I'm taking that as Coleman's then.
Entirely fair. Okay, he then attempts to grasp the slang of the youth by saying radical, awesome, mega.
But he kind of mispronounces it, doesn't he?
Yep, and also I would say those are very much slang words from my youth. Yep. I'm 35.
Yeah. So this whole segment is about the best person that Norwich has ever produced. So I had a larger question to the group, which is, what is the best person your hometown has ever produced? Now, not to be confused with hometown celebrities, because obviously we covered Gus Honeybun in the last series.
There are more people.
But yeah, who do you think would be the best person? Don't have to be the most famous, not the biggest celebrity, but the best.
From my hometown?
Yes.
I would get, well, he's not particularly well known yet, but I would give a shout out to Dev, who is a guy I know who plays in the band Idols, who are currently doing very well. He's from Newton Abbott. I remember I went into the bar where he works sometimes and said, congratulations, you're Newton Abbott's biggest celebrity. You're now officially more famous than the Newton Abbott Cheese and Onion Fair. And he's quite proud of that.
Do you think he's more famous than Gus Honeybun as well?
Probably not in the West Country, but on a national slash Europe level, yeah, miles ahead.
Stab, Nick, what about you guys? Best people from your hometowns?
Well, I don't know about best, but certainly most famous would be James Corden, who went to my school and lived down the road from me. And on behalf of everyone in the UK, I'd just like to say, I'm sorry.
We don't accept your apology.
Yeah, not good enough.
Again, same with Nick, like not in terms of best, but most famous. Alan Carr, the TV presenter from Northampton.
Okay.
Matt Smith, the doctor. He's from Northampton. Tim Minchin was born in Northampton.
Wow.
Yeah,
did not expect fact. That.
Yeah, yeah. Des O'Connor, the TV presenter.
This is a where are you getting this list
gold
from?
Mine.
Yep.
It's amazing what you can find on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Hang on. Surely this is just a case of... You're from more of a city, so there's
well,
just
no,
more to choose
from. Northampton is a town. The football team is called Northampton Town. It doesn't have a cathedral. It's a town. And also, the host of Monkey Tennis, Tom Stab, is from Northampton as well.
who is he? Never heard of him.
No, I've got no idea. So for me, I looked up notable people.
Oh, bloody hell. Diana was from Northampton.
There you go.
Yeah, Lady Diana.
Rest in peace.
Okay, we'll go with that then.
Northamptonshire, yeah, she's probably most famous.
So for me, I looked up notable people from Devizes.
Whispering Bob Harris as well.
Oh, we're still going. Any more?
No, sorry, carry on.
We can wait.
Oh, Leslie Joseph from Birds of a Feather. All from Northampton. Brilliant, this is great.
Do we need to close this laptop in a minute?
Shall I read the whole list?
This is basically the places of my life with Tom Stab.
Shut it down.
So for me, I looked up notable people from Devizes, which is a relatively small town compared to Tom Stab's residence. Oh no, hang on, he's got more.
Robert Llewellyn. From Red Dwarf. Crichton is from Northampton.
Okay, I think we have a winner there. So for Devizes, I quite enjoyed Simon May, the songwriter, and I thought I'd never heard of him, but he composed the themes for EastEnders and Howard's Way. So that's probably the best that I can do.
That's as good as it gets.
There's also Andy Scott, the lead guitarist of Sweet. And
who?
Well... No, I've heard of them, but I'll tell you a band I haven't heard of, The Struts, and this is listed on Wikipedia. Jed Elliott, bassist from The Struts. And I thought, I've never heard of that. Is that like an old band? Apparently, it's quite a new band. He is dating Little Mix member Jade. He's been dating her since January 2016. But even better, the band The Struts claim their influences include Queen, The Darkness, The Rolling Stones, Aerosmith, Death Leopard, The Smiths, Oasis, The Libertines, The Strokes, and My Chemical Romance.
Oh, they are all over the place, aren't they?
Be real. Your influences are every successful band ever.
Yeah. And also the comic book writer, Alan Moore, is from Northampton.
Okay, you need to stop now, though.
They're all good.
Leslie Joseph.
Is there more to talk about the Simply the Best of Norfolk at this point? Obviously, it's a phoning that continues.
All I would quickly say is I would be 100% backing Delia on this.
Oh, really? Okay. Interesting.
I like Delia.
Yeah. Where are you?
Put
the wind down, Delia.
We need to talk about what happens between 2:56 and 3:02 on this, which is basically what I love about this whole series of Mid Morning Matters is that I think most of the funniest moments are bits with no speech. He's not presenting.
Yeah,
there's just something happening, and this is the first of them.
Is this when he's brushing his teeth?
Alan is brushing his teeth.
yeah.
Reading a magazine while next to him, an anonymous man stands poised with a plastic bowl, waiting to catch his spittle. And I thought, how has Alan got this power? Like,
is it Psychic Simon?
No, it's not.
It's someone like else. A staff member. And the funny thing is, I didn't even notice that guy stood there until my second viewing as well. I was like, oh, fucking hell, what's going on?
And doesn't a load of toothpaste fall out of his mouth and into his lap anyway?
I don't spot that.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Amazing.
And the music on that segment is clearly supposed to be Duran Duran Girls on Film, but obviously they couldn't get clearance, so it's
I just thought that that Psychic Simon, initially my thought was that, you know, he was more of a professional, he was getting things right, and it was Alan that was fucking up, but it's not the case. I think they both mess up about equally.
Yeah, I think what, as the series continues, I think the main difference in those two is Simon is clearly better educated and just cleverer than Alan in quite a lot, and I think that's something that really grinds Alan's gears, so to speak.
You see him progressively trying to dumb himself down.
And in fact, this come along a bit in the best Norfolk bit about the different Cromwells and stuff like that as well, because Alan doesn't know that there's another famous Cromwell.
I wonder if cross-referencing this with I, Partridge, that's one of the reasons that Alan then puts Simon under pressure to start drinking in the morning, because it brings him down to Alan's level.
Oh, I love that.
It was so unprofessional.
Anyway, the time is 12:00 midday, and it's time for Alan's chat down. I had at this point,
which is a street style for the over 40s.
Yes. He seemed a bit lost without Simon at this point. He needs Simon to fill the time while he's thinking or, like, you know, trying to come up with ideas. It's a bit weird. Call an over 40s phone in, and then Alan has to deal with a nervous caller, which reminded me a bit of Rebecca Front's characters in Alan's stuff, you know.
That
people don't really understand the format of the phone in, they need coaxing. There's quite a few of them, isn't there? The one that rings in for a phone in a later episode and just says, I don't know.
I think that's testament to the audience that Alan has, though. He's got a lot of imbeciles.
Yeah. And just a quick question to the group. Did you know that you can avoid type 2 diabetes by injecting yourself with Ribena?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if we fat check that, that's not going to hold up.
Thanks though, Alan. He also then complains in another kind of cutaway that his tea tastes of chicken for a good 2 or 3 minutes. Complains to Kevin, which I thought might have been the man holding a spit bowl. Surely he doesn't have more than one, like, assistant.
Yeah.
Well, in a different episode, there is another member of staff that he's complaining to.
Who are these people?
But before he complains of the tea tasting of chicken, I think we have the call from Holt, don't we?
Yes. Jill.
Yep.
No, it's Judith.
I know.
Oh, right.
I always thought it was Jill.
So did
then,
I.
Yeah, then had to kind of listen back, and actually she never says what her name is.
The reason we think it's Jill.
No, sorry.
At the beginning, in the early stage,
she never actually
The reason we her think
name.
It's Jill is because he shouts, "You're from Holt, Jill, you're from Holt."
And I did think, because when he's chatting to this caller, Judith, not Jill, he talks about how he once dated someone from Holt. So I wondered, is it Jill from I'm Alan Partridge? Is she from Holt?
And that's
where the connections come in.
Nice.
I mean, I'm projecting quite a lot there, but I like it.
I like it. I'm going with it. Yeah. I'm with you,
that's
Tom.
A solid
Very
through
good.
Line. Another conspiracy thing that just occurred to me.
Absolute conspiracy.
You said that there's quite a few different people throughout the series that are basically there to hold spitballs for him or, like, fix his tea or whatever. Mm. I wonder if that the point of that is that they're basically interns, but every week there's
they
a new
being,
one.
Or they're all being fired or
yeah,
something.
Because either they can't stand him, or he has them quietly removed because his tea tastes like chicken, or they haven't held a spit bowl close enough to his toothbrush or
yeah,
whatever.
It's quite possible.
Whilst Alan is bemoaning that his tea tastes of chicken, did anyone clock what the song was that was playing in the background?
No, I don't have a note of that.
It is the absolute straight up banger In a Big Country by Big Country.
How does it go?
In a big country.
Great. No,
I see what you mean.
It's an absolute anthem.
Yeah, no,
very much for fans of Crowded House, Delamitri.
So basically.
Yeah, yeah.
He's also reading a car magazine whilst he's complaining about the tea tasting chicken as well. But I think from my notes, you couldn't make out what magazine it is. So is it Top Gear magazine? Is it what car magazine? I couldn't tell.
I mean, either, it's a car magazine. Yeah. Not interested.
You know, sorry, just to go back on, you're from Holt, Jill, you're from Holt. He's obviously implying that people from Holt are, I don't know, a little bit,
Of a type, yeah.
So I did a little bit of research and I tried to find something salacious or controversial about Holt. You will never guess what I found. Guess what I found?
Nothing.
Correct. There is nothing controversial about Holt whatsoever. Yeah. There is nothing on their Wikipedia apart from Matthew Pinsent, the rower, is from Holt, but literally that is about it.
That's it's similar in a way to the way that they talked about how they picked Norwich and Norfolk as where Alan's from, because they said that it was something of a blank slate and they could project their own prejudices onto it. So it's kind of like that with Holt, really, I guess.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello friends, Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just interrupting this week's episode very briefly. The live shows we announced at the start of the episode, if you thought that was all the news we've got this week, think again. I have a brand new podcast. It's called Reads Like a Four, and it's all about reviews, critics, and professional criticism. Each week I speak to a different critic about the past and future of reviews, their best and worst reviews, unexpected reactions from artists and fans, untold stories, and much more. Over the coming weeks, I speak to people from Pitchfork, The Guardian, Enemy, Vice, and more. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, if you've ever completely, wholeheartedly agreed with or violently disagreed with a review, then please do give it a listen. You'll find it everywhere you get Monkey Tennis from, and it's called Reads Like a Four. You can also track it down on Twitter, at Reads Like a Four. So please do have a look. I really hope you enjoy it. Thank you. And obviously, Monkey Tennis will continue as normal. In fact, here it comes now.
Yeah, he then has a Tony Robinson anecdote, which is another good example of what I like to call Alan yes, Coogan no. These come up once in a while, and it's basically where Alan says something that is kind of the opposite of what you imagine Coogan would think. So he says of Tony Robinson, he's a lovely fella, although I don't like his politics, and that's obviously because Tony Robinson is, like Coogan, a staunch Labour supporter, so obviously Alan would not be a fan.
Yeah, good point.
In the same way as you often get Alan kind of praising people on the right and kind of writers for the Daily Mail and so on, and you can kind of tell it's because it's the inverse of Steve's opinion.
Uh-oh, are we going to get lovey lefties accusations thrown at us again?
Oh, God.
Yeah, definitely. But before he's talking about Tony Robinson as well, there's a little... He's talking about Howard Carter. Where he says, without him, archaeology would be known as digging, which I thought was quite fun. Mm. Because he's the guy that discovered the tomb of Tutankhamun in 1922. Something which I thought would be right up Jed Street. Have you guys heard of The Curse of Tutankhamun?
Yeah. I'm aware of it.
Don't look in his eyes.
It's not that.
That's Medusa.
No. Because I've seen him. He's in Egypt.
You've seen him?
Yeah, and you're not supposed to look into his eyes. I'm sure that's a thing.
Well, that's not what I was going to talk about.
Okay, right. While you do that, I'm going to go on the interweb and see if that's true.
So you're off to the fact cave. basically, it's a belief that the curse has brought to many people's attention due to the mysterious death of a few members of the team and prominent visitors to the tomb shortly after. So there are 11 deaths linked to Carter's crime. True, that are attributed to the curse, but then also a lot of people point out there are probably about 80 people that are actually involved, so the statistics yep. don't really hold up.
A little bit of extra knowledge.
I can't actually spell it, so I've phonetically spelt it Tutankhamun, but Google has given me a suggestion of Tottenham cartoon.
A little bit of side knowledge. The Tutankhamun, I'm doing this from memory, I didn't note it down. What was found in the cave, in the tomb, is now on display at...
Is it a British Museum?
No, it's at Highclere House, which is where Downton Abbey is filmed.
Oh.
So I went to go visit the Downton Abbey house, and they've got a whole exhibition of all the stuff from Tutankhamun's tomb in at the bottom of Downton Abbey.
And did you look into his eyes?
No, I just tried to keep my head down, stay out of trouble. Head straight to the gift shop.
Some would say we strayed from the path a little bit here.
Us? Never.
He would never do that.
Around this point, Alan decides he's going to do the rest of the programme without any teas. And what I did here was something that I like to do throughout Mid-Morning Matters, where I pause it, predict what's going to happen next, and then see how right I was. So I paused this, and then I wrote, "This will be over in seconds." I unpaused it, and then he said, "No, it's too complicated." He also then compares Genesis to heroin at this point.
Oh, I think I missed that.
I mean, both equally addictive, I would say.
So terribly Moorish. Yeah.
Soft rock fan Nick Alder there. Yeah.
And then claims that he's being, I quote, harangued to throw his own hat in the ring for Norfolk's best person.
Yeah, bullshit is what I say.
Where would he rank?
Well, I mean, he as a fictitious character high, him as a character in his own world low.
Yeah, you nearly find out, don't you? There's quite a funny bit coming up about that.
Do we now move on to what one of Alan's picks is? Bernard Matthews, who he describes as the Turkey Baron. He slays 7 million turkeys a year for 30 years, and then he does some quick maths and works out that's basically a quarter of a billion turkeys.
And they're therefore responsible for the biggest ornithological genocide of recent times.
I also like that he says those facts, he says he knows them because Bernard's a pal, but I noticed that he still has to read it off a sheet of paper.
Yeah, he refers to him as a close friend, doesn't he? But I did fact check this, and it is correct that Bernard Matthews Limited, not Bernard Matthews personally, does slay 7 million turkeys a year.
I went onto Bernard Matthews' Wikipedia page, and he died on the 25th of November 2010, which was just 6 days after this episode went live on YouTube.
Hopefully not of shock.
Bernard Matthews, also now owned by the Two Sisters Company. Anyone remember them? They've been in the news recently.
No.
Nope.
Well, for...
Diddly Dit to D, Two Sisters.
I like it.
Very good.
Well, you might remember them from 2013 when they were allegedly fined £100,000 for offences relating to amending the dates of the shelf life of the chicken that they sell.
That was them.
Or perhaps 2014 when there was an undercover investigation that found that raw chicken was being contaminated after it was dropped on the floor. Or perhaps 2017 where there was a scandal where The Guardian and ITV News found workers changing dates on slaughtered chickens. All of that is alleged, though I'm not saying that Two Sisters Company is in any way awful.
I'm not saying awful. Why have you said awful? He pauses to put glasses on to read anything off a sheet of paper, and I thought, why doesn't he just wear them throughout the show? And I wondered if it's webcam vanity, perhaps.
Quite possibly. Yeah.
Or they're just reading glasses.
But
it really could be that.
But the thing is, he has to be reading throughout the show because all of his radio show stuff is on the screen in front of him. So
yeah.
Maybe
we'll never know.
Talking about people from Norfolk and Norwich and so on, I reread the Guardian article where Norfolk civic leaders blame Coogan for Norwich not getting Euro Capital of Culture, and I liked it because at the bottom they listed the top 10 Norfolk attractions sort of as proof that there's more going on there than
there's more to Norfolk than this.
Exactly. But the problem is that those attractions are terrible and rubbish, and I'd like to read you a few examples.
Please do. Yes, please.
So these are the ten best attractions in Norwich or Norfolk. They include, well, I'm not going to do all 10, but here are four of them. They include the UK's tallest draining mill, Norwich Castle, included apparently because it has, and I quote, a vast collection of teapots. Arts and Crafts, they've put as an attraction, just the general,
just a general thing.
Quantifying that by saying Langham Glass has demonstrations. And then, bearing in mind, this is a list of top 10 Norfolk attractions, so things that you would go to Norfolk and expect to see. Delia Smith.
Brilliant. Just wandering around.
She's going looking point.
She's not a fucking museum. Ridiculous.
I was thinking, with the Bernard Matthews ornithological genocide, obviously someone that has a very close link to the world of Alan is Bill Oddie, and I thought, well, if there's one person that's not going to like that, it's going to be Bill Oddie. So then I thought, why not have a look at his recent tweets, because that's always a bit of fun.
Oh yeah, we like that, don't we?
We did that on episode 1 of Bin Morning Matters as well. So would you like some of his best recent tweets?
Yes, then, please.
So in a new regular feature, it's time for Oddie Watch. 7th of December. Just in case anyone disagrees with or is offended by any of my tweets, please assume that I don't mean whatever I've said, except when I am deadly serious. I trust all discerning tweeters will find this perfectly obvious, probably now telly time. Sure.
Love it.
Also, a lot of the grammar and punctuation is quite poor on these. 23rd of December, what was once awesome became amazing and is now quality. Whatever is next still won't mean anything. I concluded this after a robust contemplation.
What is he banging on about?
Bill, are you okay?
Is Bill Oddie okay?
Is the man okay?
No, he's not.
And the most recent tweet on 8th of January, no fox hunting, that's in capitals.
Good.
One can only rejoice, but as Sting says, we'll be watching you. Who? You know who you are. Two foxes in my garden yesterday. I swear they were celebrating. Cheers. You know what, Bill? Cheers to you.
I love this man.
More from Bill next week.
Yep. Stay tuned.
A weird possible continuity thing I noticed is that there's obviously quite a few cutaways where you see Alan broadcasting from the neighbouring studio. Now, in radio stations, it's always very important that they keep all the clocks on time because presenters are referring to them constantly. The clock in the studio that the camera is in seems to always say 11:25 at any time of day, and I thought surely they can't have been so slack as to have done all those cutaway shots in one go and not thought about changing the clock.
Ooh, it wouldn't surprise me.
I think that's it.
Remember, limited budget.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of that. The results are in on Norfolk's greatest person. What I like is that he starts to read out where he's come in the poll, sees where he's done, and then goes, actually, I'll take my hat out. I wondered, a question to the group based on that. Is he a bit less delusional than previous Alans? I think Alan 10 years ago would have had this phone in and immediately put himself in the running, I think, or expected to have won. Whereas I think now he would have read it out had he come third, perhaps. So he seems a bit more at ease with himself.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there are quite a few more moments throughout the series where you see that. And I think, yeah, the character is definitely is changed from what we've seen before. But I'm sure we can expand upon that as the weeks go by.
Yeah, he's more comfortable, isn't he? There's still,
he's less manic.
Yeah, there's still plenty of awkwardness, but it's sort of nothing he can't overcome, even when it's, as we'll find out, sneezing blood into a nun's face.
So yeah, so the results were, just to, I'm sure the listeners want to know, it was a tie between Cromwell and Nelson, of course.
But it's not long before he's got another game, Surname Mastermind. I actually thought this, of all the phone-ins, I thought this was the best one.
I thought it was rubbish, personally. No,
I've got a note that says actually quite a good quiz.
Yeah, I would listen to this. I think this is the sort of thing that could exist on a commercial radio station and people
that
would
go for
it.
That is very true, yeah.
More than Creed Crunch or Gender Thrash.
Before we conclude, Mustard, I thought we'd have our own quick game of Celebrity Surname Mastermind.
Yes. Ooh, like it.
So just as a recap,
Nick, you've actually done, like, you're prepared.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dave Clifton is speechless.
Yeah. So I
wish you were.
So I will read out two names, and then it is up to you to agree on what the surname is. So I'm happy for. I would say there's
Are
a
we
mix
to
of. Well, I'd say it's a mix of dead easy and possibly a bit harder.
All right. Well, okay. Let's just see what happens. Let's just go with it.
So
off the cuff, get the bell ready.
Donald, Melania,
Trump,
Kurt, Courtney,
Love.
Well,
is that Cobain?
Cobain.
Yeah, sure. That's what I was after.
Right, of course, yeah.
Teresa, Philip,
May.
Simon, Maureen.
Lipman?
Nope.
Oh.
Simon and Maureen.
I might need a clue.
From driving school?
Nope. Very well known actor, probably a lesser known wife, a comedy hero, I would say, who's sort of transcended into American things, i.e. films.
Peg. Oh.
Robert Gucci Grace.
What?
Gucci
You've lost
Grace.
Me.
Webb?
Nope. Think evil.
What's Gucci Grace?
Don't Maine.
Know. Nope.
Don't know.
Evil dictating genius? Maybe not so much of the genius. An evil dictator.
Mussolini. Stalin. Lenin.
A bit more contemporary.
Pol Pot.
Un.
Okay, it's a miss. It's Mugabe. Sharon. Ozzy.
Osbourne.
David. Victoria.
Beckham.
Jessica. Jerry.
Simpson.
No.
Halliwell.
No.
Jessica Simpson. No, no.
Jessica Jerry.
Jerry.
Sinclair.
No. Hall.
Hall.
No.
The mouse.
Jerry is probably the one to focus on here.
Anderson?
Nope.
Jerry.
Adams.
Nope.
Give up.
It's a miss. It's Seinfeld.
Ah.
Will. Jada Pinkett.
Smith.
Michelle. Barack.
Obama.
Eva. Adolf.
Hitler.
And that concludes Celebrity Surname Mastermind.
Oh my god! I think that was wow. that was actually a slightly different format to Alan's as well, wasn't it? Because his were two separate celebrities
people,
that
not
aren't
together.
Married.
That's what I was thinking. I didn't realise you did. Well, some of them
either works. I'd say
we've all had a lovely time. Yeah. Right, let's move on to Pepper, the second part of this episode. Psychic Simon's back in the house.
Yep, that's my first note. Yes, Psychic Simon is back.
Trying to chide Alan about a potential date, Alan shuts it down immediately.
I
suspect that this might be an early date with Angela, who obviously is more present in future series.
That's what I would assume.
And Alpha Papa.
Can we talk about the Boxley Wheat Sheaf?
Yeah, of course.
So this is where Alan's been on this implied date. Now, from a bit of Googling, it looks to me like the Boxley Wheat Sheaf gastropub, it seems to be the implication, is not a real place, but it does seem to appear in a few pieces of Alan fiction. So it's also mentioned in iPartridge as well. So,
so it's kind of like a chorister's thing.
Yeah, I think it's an invented local establishment. But what I really liked is I found an article that Alan wrote for Shortlist, that's Alan in inverted commas, where he says this about the Boxley Wheat Sheaf. For a real treat, forget everything you think you know about folk music and get your backsides down to the Boxley Wheat Sheaf on the second and fourth Sundays of every month. So that's Alan's recommendation there.
Lovely. See you there.
There's quite a bit of chat about toilet graffiti, stating that the woman who does the weather is a talking animal of some kind. I think he's putting it politely. And then Alan says it's okay to mention it because he's not used her name and there are two people that do the weather. I paused it again at this point and made an incorrect prediction that he would identify exactly the person like he did with Domingo from Little Oakley.
But the other person does the weather is a man, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the joke.
Got ya.
I think they reference him in a later episode about people just didn't like his voice and they protested. Right. Yeah.
He then has a phone in where he says, if you could make one species of animal extinct, which would it be and how would you do it? I thought it is so Alan to ask how and not why. So
yeah.
The question of why you'd exterminate this entire species is not in question. He just wants to know the method.
Yeah.
Do we all have answers to that question?
Well, I did just think that Steve from Swaffham, who phones in, that says he'd make flightless birds extinct by putting their bird seed on a shelf just a little bit out of their reach was
that's
absolutely
so good.
Brilliant.
So good.
Then the child does a drawing where he would get rid of chimpanzees by turning Battersea Power Station into a flamethrower. But then I think my favourite was the text from Farnham where he just said, cats, hammers. Yeah. Turns out that... it's from Fakenham. Which ironically is a real place, which led me to look at some Norfolk villages and a short quiz I'd like to play called Fakenham or Realenham.
That is brilliant.
So play along at home.
I'm going to give you five names of villages in the Norfolk or broader Norfolk area. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me if they are real or Realenham or Fakenham. Number one, Pudding Norton.
Realenham.
Fakenham.
We need a consensus.
I'll go with the majority.
Okay, I'll go with the majority.
Realenham.
It's Realenham.
Yes.
Number two, Little Snoring.
Fakenham.
Fine.
It's Realenham.
Bugger.
Swanton Novas.
Fakenham.
It's Realenham.
Wow.
Number four, a throwback to number two, great snoring.
I think these are all going to be reeling them, and I think that's going to be the gag.
Is that the joke?
Reeling them.
He's bloody got it. Great snoring is reeling them, and so is number five, my personal favourite, Melton Constable. Brilliant. God bless you, Norfolk. Brilliant.
Before we move on, a quick question to the group. Which animal would you make extinct, and how would you do it? Who wants to take that one?
Happy to. It's rats. I would Pied Piper them into a volcano.
Oh, I like that.
Yep. Tom?
Cockroaches. Get rid of them. Disgusting. Don't need them. Probably going to need to be a nuclear apocalypse, though.
Right. Although, no, they survive those.
Survive that.
Just a giant.
Oh, you can't get rid of them.
Loads of shoes. Just smashing them.
Or giant sticky pads with loads of glue on that they can't get off. Right. That'll do.
Nick?
I would get a big net and get every single sea creature out of the sea. Batter them, deep fry them, get put on a lovely meal for everyone so that then I can finally frolic in the sea without the risk of being nibbled.
I think that would probably destroy the earth, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah.
Yeah, it's fine, just go shopping
Nick,
and wait.
But then Nick would be scared of going in the sea.
Yeah, yeah. And I could at least have a splash in the sea without the risk of being pecked by
a
crab.
I've seen you splash in the sea.
Yeah, but I'm terrified.
You got out immediately. Mine would be spiders. I don't care. I don't know, blow them up or something. But they can fuck off. I hate them so much. But I did actually do a little bit of research online, and I found that without all spiders, insect populations would explode, food crops would be decimated, ecological balances would be ravaged, and humans would probably starve within a matter of months.
But that's not stopped you.
Yeah. No, I'm still destroying spiders by blowing them up.
Does that mean we should or we shouldn't get rid of them? I'm a bit confused. I did a bit of background watch on this episode as well, which I've done a few times rewatching the series. So they always seem to have a few props or items around that give it a bit of realism for the grounding for the characters. So you'll see on the sofa behind them in this episode, there's quite a few car magazines spread out. Mm-hmm. And I think that happens in quite a lot of episodes. Alan is often reading a car-based magazine.
Yeah, nice additional detail.
Yeah,
Kind of like the scene setting between broadcast moments as well, where they're sitting back. There's a great one coming up that's now making me laugh as I think of it, but let's save it. There's a lovely bit of pettiness now where Alan is corrected on his typhoon warning.
That's not pettiness though, is it? That's just factual reporting.
Alan's comeback is the pettiness. He basically mistakes Norfolk US for Norfolk UK and effectively panics the whole his many listeners. But then Alan then has to correct the newsreader who's corrected him. He says, the newsreader says, back in 30, and Alan had minutes.
Is it time to talk about English wine?
I think it is. I mean, if you were having a love luncheon, you might want to share some wine with a partner, perhaps, or, as psychic Simon correctly points out, or the man in your life, if you're gay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which Alan's not too keen on.
Well, yeah, to be fair, at this point, Alan confesses that around 1983, he developed a fairly robust disliking for the gay community. But that was before he met Dale Winton. Hello, Dale.
But it's all about going to the Earl's Court boat show with Dale Winton, which is also referred to in the I Partridge book,
where he went
to the Earl's Court boat show with Winton O'Grady, with Dale Winton, Paul O'Grady, and Noel Edmonds.
Told him that he'd be doing that 20 years ago, he'd have probably spat in your face.
There's another nice tie-up to I Partridge where Simon writes a joke about the gay community. Yes. Alan laughs and laughs, but then says he can't read it on air because it's quite hateful, it ties back to him talking about Psychic Simon's material being basically way out of line.
But moments before, do remember, Alan was in absolute hysterics over the joke.
He says it's very funny, but it's quite hateful. Now we're joined by
Rosie Witter
from the British Wine Marketing Board,
which does not exist. I did check.
Not surprised.
I recognised her, but I wasn't sure where from.
I can tell you. Well, I'll tell you where I recognised her from instantly, which was she was in the threesome scene in Peep Show. Remember where Jez wants to have a threesome and she turns up with like a bandage. On her arm but also she has worked on quite a lot of Coogan projects, so Saxondale. Coogan's Run, and she was in a Cock and Bull Story as well. She's also been in an episode of Inside Number 9, but the big hitters, she's been in Casualty and The Bill.
Of course she has.
She also bears more than a passing resemblance to Felicity Montague as well.
I had it in my notes that it was Felicity Montague. I thought it was just without all the gubbins that goes on, you know, the grey hair wig or whatever it is. I thought it was her.
Alan starts the feature by being very nervous about sniffing the same glass as her. He's broken his cleanliness
hygiene
protocol.
More than happy to spit into a bowl that another man is holding. That's fine.
There's no cross contamination there, I guess. that's
no
why
crossing
that's
of
fine.
The streams.
I also, when I was looking up Rosie Witter here, I did notice on the credits for this episode that Neil Gibbons, one of the writers, mm-hmm. is one of the male phone callers in this episode.
Alan also can't smell wine properly and starts taking massive gulps, immediately hyperventilates, yes. which then leads to lots of confessions relating to him being clinically fed up. Yeah. He says he hyperventilating, it used to lead to panic attacks. Jesus, not now.
yeah, that's great.
And then the beautiful line where she says to him, oh, you know, from that last gulp, what were you getting? A panic attack.
So, and it's just during this segment, Psychic Simon's in the background. What's mm-hmm. he doing?
Is he reading a magazine?
He's doing a crossword. Really paying attention to the show that he's a part of.
Rosie challenges Alan to explain what the notes are that he's getting on the wine, and there is so much dead air.
Yeah. And then the answer is
chew it.
Well, you've got that as a peppery wine. Bang, pepper.
Yes. Yeah. As soon as I smelt that, I thought it was a peppery wine. Yeah. Pepper.
Yeah. She basically gives him a little bit of encouragement by saying yes, yeah. and then from there he thinks he's an absolute wine expert.
Because the way this segment starts off, it's brilliant. Because he's basically trying to impress her and act yeah. like he knows how yeah. to do wine tasting, what's going on, and
is this where they're talking about Merlots, and he tests her by giving her three different scenarios to see if the wine's appropriate, such as with some friends alongside Spag Bol. Yes, she says.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
that's
good. It's about what other what other uses can wine have apart from drinking?
On your own in front of Newsnight? Yeah, not a problem. So, and the big test at the launch of Stirling Moss's autobiography. Also fine. Wow, that is a versatile wine.
Also, background watch for this scene. There is a massive orange to be seen, and also a couple of pairs of scissors.
Lovely. He's drunk on air by this point, isn't he? Yeah.
And is the implication he's drunk after about two glasses of wine?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Well, because he was gulping it as well. Like, he doesn't know how to taste wine. That's
also, we do know Alan is a lightweight as well. After 45 minutes of drinking, he's falling asleep at the bar.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
We've made the point before that there are lots of bits, especially in latter-day Partridge, where the line between Alan and Steve is more blurred than it is perhaps in earlier. I think the same is true of Tim Key and Psychic Simon, especially in this bit. Mm. Where I think that Rosie says it lingers on the palate, and then Psychic Simon says like a lazy forklift truck driver, which I thought was wordplay on a Tim Key level, perhaps above a Sidekick Simon level.
Definitely, and I made a note that also Psychic Simon coming out with comedy like that, it's too intellectual for Alan as well. Like Alan would have never thought of a side like that either.
Is Psychic
Simon? But he does dub the joke. Not bad.
Not bad. Exactly, because he's annoyed that basically Simon's made a really good gag that he didn't think of, so he's got to play it down.
Is Psychic Simon funny?
Yes.
Right. Carry on.
Next question.
For the most part, I think it's a bit like Alan, it's funny in small doses. If you had to be his friend, he'd drive you insane, wouldn't he?
Yeah, well, I think you have a thing where I think Psychic Simon feels like he's got to bring a wacky element to it. And that's part... You also get Alan doing that on some of these episodes as well, where they're trying to be like, oh, we're a bit Zoo Radio, we're a little bit zany, and it just never works. It comes off quite cringy.
Alan is not zany, is he?
Yeah. Despite at the end of this feature, Alan saying to Rosie Witter that was just good radio.
Simple as that.
It wasn't, because he was talking about the wines and just going, that one, that one, not talking about what the wines are and what they taste like.
Question to the group. Has anyone here actually done wine tasting?
No.
Because I did it in Australia, and I'm pretty sure when you do proper wine tasting, you're taking a very small sip, and it's all about smelling.
Yep.
But in Australia, you're basically gulping it down, and you end up having a couple of bottles worth of wine, and you're absolutely hammered. It's brilliant. I recommend it.
It's quantity over quality.
It really is.
Alan, towards the end of the feature, has asked for his favourite. At this point, I paused and said, I guarantee you he just goes for the most expensive.
Yep.
Yes.
Unpause. Yep. Yes, he does.
Yes. So which is the best wine? And obviously, his answer is... You'd expect that, because it's all about snobbery with him.
Yes,
it's
about status. Yep.
And for him, money equals status. Yes. It's as simple as that. So the £12 one is obviously, he then says, oh yeah, that's got the best flavour. Yeah. But he hasn't clarified that until he knows that's the most expensive.
For the same logic that he in I, Man and Partridge wouldn't run Pear Tree Productions with a skeleton staff of two if it meant a lower status car. same
exactly
thing.
Exactly that. I love the bit when he's then digging around in his pockets, getting like small change to pay her for the wine, which
that's more than
I'm sure
enough.
He doesn't have to
do. That's also a bit of a status thing, isn't it? A bit of a, oh no, I can pay my own way. Take this money.
And just, I have my notes here. Just this whole segment, just seems to me like the sort of thing Jeremy Clarkson would do. I don't know why. I just felt
I think Clarkson would offer up money for it.
No.
Well, no, but I just thought like, cause I don't know. I was getting hints of Clarkson about Alan here.
I don't
think. I think it's definitely a part
I'm getting
Partridge.
A hint of Clarkson. Yeah. Just a nose Clarkson. Of James May. Yeah.
I don't think it, like I said, I don't think it's a terrible feature, but I think it's executed badly because of who's in charge. Alan.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
As
yeah.
always.
I think on a similar note, we're talking about whether Psychic Simon is good or not. I think with the right guy, with better guidance, with a good host, he could be steered into being really great. Mm. But yeah. he hasn't got that. So
yeah, because whenever Simon, like we were just saying, whenever Simon does do something good, Alan has to bat it back down immediately. So he's never really given the chance to flourish into a great broadcaster.
And like a fine wine, we've matured to the end of this episode and it's time for us to go before we turn into vinegar. join us next week for episode 3, Idiom and Inception. if you want to get in touch with us, you can email thepartridgepod@gmail.com. Twitter, we're @thepartridgepod. Facebook.com/thepartridgepod. Instagram @monkeytennispod. We would love to hear from you. If you get a second, you're enjoying the podcast, please do rate and review us on iTunes. The more good reviews we get, the more people we end up in front of. It really does work. From all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thanks and goodbye.
Thanks a lot.
Monkey Tennis is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. If you're interested in podcasts about Red Dwarf, X-Files, what to watch on Netflix, or TV pilot episodes pitched against one another, find them at postpoppodcast.com. Our artwork is by Finn McLean, and you can find his website at finn.design. The theme is an excerpt from Galloping Home by Dennis King. Thanks for listening.
Monkey Tennis?
This is great banter.
Ha. Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Are you on an E? Monkey Tennis?
Yeah.
I'm spinning plates here, mate, I'll be honest. Monkey Tennis?
There have been times when I've been more rubbery than turgid.
Monkey Tennis?
Tits bits. Tit bits.
Yes, and yes.
It's just an idiom.
You're an idiot.
Ooh, that's mustard.
Monkey Tennis?
Sustaining and maintaining our core listenership in an increasingly fragmented marketplace.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.